This is the Fix Your Sciatica Podcast.
Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome, Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome, EDS, what is that? How does that actually impact our lives? Do you happen to have it? Do you need help trying to figure out what the next steps are in regards to dealing with your pain if you have something like EDS? We're going to be able to actually answer all of those questions today with Jennifer Balducci, who's a physical therapist and actually serves a lot of folks who are dealing with EDS. So Jennifer, it's so great to see you. Thank you so much for being on today's episode.
Thank you, Ashley. Really excited to be here with you today.
So before we go into talking a little bit more about what EDS is and how to manage it, you have a very extensive experience in this realm as a physical therapist working with folks dealing with EDS. Before we go into it, tell us a little bit more about yourself and the journey to where you're at today.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a physical therapist for over 28 years now, and I've worked with a lot of different types of clients over that time period. Because I myself have HEDS, I always have had a lot of obvious, interest in those type of clients. And over time, just naturally have just become more of an expert on the subject with the help of the EDS Society and all the great providers that are part of that community, and really educating ourselves and how to best serve this community.
Amazing. Yeah, I think there is something very special, especially when you're working with a professional who has lived the life of someone with the condition, the scenario. So then way,
it definitely makes you more empathetic, right?
Yes, absolutely. More empathetic. And then also I think the empathy for sure, because of the fact that, one, pain itself is already a pretty invisible thing to see, it's invisible. So you can't see it. And so I know I've discussed with a lot of clients and patients where they're like, my doctor says that I'm having all of this pain and it's caused by my head. Am I going crazy? And all of a sudden it makes them feel as if the pain and the feelings that they're experiencing is not real. And it just creates this perfect storm of challenges. And so for someone like you who's been in this situation with that empathy, it allows us to really connect with our patients and really have the outcomes that patients really deserve. So
and validate them, right? Because they're so used to being like brushed aside or told it's, given a kind of a what I call a garbage pail diagnosis of fibromyalgia and just having, more global pain and not really understanding the root cause of their symptoms.
Yeah. And a large contributing factor to that is the aspect of when you go to a doctor, like they're seeing probably 30 to 40 patients a day. And it ends up being very challenging because of the fact that unless you're a genius, it's really hard to make a concrete diagnosis within 5 minutes of meeting someone.
Right.
As we get more experienced, it probably takes less and less time, but it's not going to be a 5 minute diagnosis. And us to have to see 30 to 40 patients a day, it actually ends up being unrealistic. So
absolutely.
I know for me, when I transitioned into the practice of seeing patients a little less frequently, and really ultimately say like 1 hour sessions, 45 minute sessions, I get a better understanding of what's going on. And from there, we can actually take some true action versus just kind of saying, okay, here are these 15 different exercises, or here's this garbage diagnosis.
Right.
So I really appreciate that. And I remember
we're giving the same, the same protocol to every single client with a certain diagnosis. So it's just so much, I feel like you get such better results when you're really doing more of a, science-based, this is the reason why we're doing these things. And they're tailored for that specific client as well, for sure.
So you brought up the word diagnosis, right? And so for the listeners out here, people are dealing with the sciatica diagnosis. And really the diagnosis itself was used to really just classify specific conditions that people are dealing with. What's interesting is that as you're going through the various different diagnoses that are out there, you have back pain, sciatica, even from like a disease state, you have like diabetes, mellitus. But what was really interesting is that you have something like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, right? And so this brings up this whole concept of, well, what's the difference between like an actual like disease diagnosis versus a syndrome itself? And throughout your experience, what do you find those differences are?
Yeah, that's the problem. And that's why it takes so long sometimes to get a diagnosis, because it's really a diagnosis of exclusion. There's no known genetic marker for HEDS. And so you do have some genetic markers from for some different types of EDS and some scarier types, but for hypermobile EDS, there is no known actual genetic marker. And so all we're saying, it's basically like you're in this group where you have certain characteristics. And so we're ruling out all the scary things, and then we're putting you in a category based on these other things that you do have in common with other people that have symptoms within this classification of syndrome.
I really appreciate you creating that classification, because a lot of times patients will say, I have this, and then they don't know what they're like. I don't know what the syndrome is. Syndrome actually, also interestingly enough, kind of makes things sound a little bit more severe. And so because of that, we already kind of go down this cascade of some negative thought processing, which then can just make things a lot worse. So let's talk about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome specifically itself, right? Because the main episode, main reason this episode is to figure out what it is. Probably you've heard about it. I know that on social media, it has actually started to gain a little bit more traction. I'm really glad that it's getting a little bit more exposure compared to, you know, the EDS Society, which is like hosts their annual fundraiser. Now you're having actual like Instagram personalities actually creating their whole profile on that. So share us a little bit more about what EDS is, or the types of EDS that are out there.
Yeah, so there are a lot of different types of EDS. What I tell people is not to get too hung up on the diagnosis. If you go to see a geneticist and you get an actual diagnosis, and definitely if you have a genetic marker for some of the other variants of EDS, that's a kind of a different scenario. But I think what we're going to focus on today is more just two different things: HSD, which is hypermobility spectrum disorder, and then HEDS, which is hypermobility EDS. And the reason for that is they kind of have very similar symptoms. The only difference really between the two is your scoring on the Biten scale. So with HEDS, you have to have a 5 out of 9 on that scale, 5 or greater. And a lot of folks with HSD don't have those 5 points, but they still have a lot of the other shared characteristics. So things that we often see are multiple joint, either hypermobility in the joint and the tissue, or chronic dislocations, skin extensibility, easily bruising, maybe some history of GI dysfunction, definitely other family members that have hypermobility that is apparent, because it is a genetic condition and you have to inherit it from someone else. So those are the kind of the main things that we're looking for. But EDS really does, because it's really a condition of faulty collagen. When you think about, how all of our tissue is made in our body, everything is, the basis of everything is collagen. And because of our genetics, we basically have a faulty collagen gene. So it can be a lot of things. You don't build collagen that's as strong. It's a little bit more fragile. I almost describe it like it looks like Swiss cheese under a microscope sometimes. So there's just like a little bit more spacing between the collagen, and that's what gives us our flexibility and an excessive movement.
So we're looking at the collagen and it's faulty collagen, like kind of really all throughout the body. So it's not just the joint capsules themselves. We're looking at tissue, skin, anything that every
literally. Part. Literally everything. So every system in your body can be affected. And that's the part that kind of a lot of providers aren't aware of, and very well-meaning providers. They might be just looking at your joints or just looking at your muscles, but really it could be every system in your body. And the major systems that I often will kind of coach people on and give them information is their gut health. I feel like that's probably the single most important thing for, having a healthy lifestyle with this condition. Because if your gut health is not where it should be, you know, you can go down a whole cascade of things that can happen, including a lot of, mental health challenges, a lot of immune problems, and then later in life, developing some neuromotor disabilities. So gut health to me is like one of the key things to, you know, focus on with clients with hypermobility and making sure that their gut health is, you know, as optimal as possible.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit PTPatientAdvocate.com and book your free call with our experts. Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I listened to Dr. Radio, which is on Sirius XM, is actually hosted by the NYU Langone Hospital, and they'll actually discuss various different medical topics pretty much 24/7, 7 days a week. And actually, before this episode, I was actually listening to one, and they were talking about EDS, and they were also bringing up the concept of gut health and how important that is.
Right.
And I live out in California, and so because of that, I have such amazing exposure to fantastic vegetables and everything. And I actually just started reading a little bit more into the gut health aspect of it. And it's not just fruits and vegetables, but also just understanding like the microbiome in our stomach, and now that and more so in our guts, right, our intestines, and how that actually impacts how we feel. And I was going to save talking more about this towards the end of the episode,
right.
But I think it's definitely something that we as physical therapists do not have enough knowledge and not enough opportunity to be able to discuss it with our patients of the importance of the things that we put in our body and opportunities to help heal. So before we go into say like what are some of the foods and nutrition focuses that we should be addressing, tell us a little bit more about what this gut microbiome is. Like, I mean, we can obviously that could be a whole nother episode itself.
That could be a whole nother episode.
Yeah, right. But briefly, tell us a little bit more about like what this gut microbiome is, because it's probably like, I know for me, I've heard about it over the past couple of years, so I'm finally starting to take a little bit more time to actually read about it, and I'm going through a stool test with my health practitioners. For the layperson who might have heard like gut biome a little bit, maybe seen it across their research, tell us a little bit more briefly about that.
Yeah, so I think the importance just with the topic that we're talking about is that because a lot of your digestion happens because of muscle contraction, and because of our inherent lower muscle tone, food doesn't pass through our bodies as quickly as it should. It actually kind of slows down or stagnates. A lot of folks with hypermobility actually get diagnosed with gastroparesis. So if you haven't gotten your hypermobility diagnosis and you have had a gastroparesis diagnosis for no apparent reason, that's one of my big red flags. You know, if somebody comes in and they're like, oh, I have all these gut problems and I just got diagnosed with gastroparesis, right away I'm going to think, you know, unless they had another underlying medical condition, hypermobility might be in their cards. Super common. And so when food doesn't pass through quickly, it kind of can almost get like backed up and then starts to essentially like rot in your system. And that very quickly can start punching holes in your gut. When you get that leaky gut, or, you know, the lining of our gut is so thin that it's very easy to kind of perforate as food is stagnating inside of you. And then that can lead to food allergies, food sensitivities, and then eventually autoimmunity. So, you know, again, I can't stress the importance of it enough. So the way we test gut health and to know, like, besides just symptoms, you know, either you might have gotten an IBS diagnosis or, you know, chronic constipation. Sometimes my clients have both. They start off as being more constipated and then it turns into more IBS. But even without those diagnoses, if you're just looking at the gut microbiome and having a healthy gut, you want to have a lot of varied good gut bacteria is basically the magic. The more good bacteria you have, the healthier your gut will be. The more bad bacteria you have, then you have problems. You know, there's a whole host of things that we could talk about with unhealthy gut bacteria. So,
yeah, absolutely. And so I know for myself, when I was assessing my health status, I had the opportunity to actually go through a stool test. And interesting enough, I'm going to get my results later this week, which I'm actually very excited for.
That's awesome.
And so, really impactful in regards to how your body functions. And so I really appreciate you bringing that up, because we don't talk about it enough. And it's...
And it really can be one of the key things that drives whether you improve quickly or you don't improve quickly, right? So a lot of your folks that suffer with chronic back pain, you know, they might be doing everything their provider tells them, everything their therapist tells them, and they're still not improving. And some of it can be as simple as, you know, really they can't heal themselves very quickly because of that underlying pathology. So,
yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about, say, like back pain, sciatica, and EDS, right? So if we're looking at HEDS and HSD, right, we're dealing with hypermobile joints, we're dealing with some sort of gut dysbiome as well. What are some of the common trends that you have seen amongst your patients who have back pain and EDS or sciatica pain and EDS?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is that with hypermobility, we can get to end range really quickly, typically. So you might show up in a clinic and initially, you know, you can't bend at all because your back is really sore. Therapist gives you a specific set of movements and you improve. And now all of a sudden you can palm the floor. The problem is, and this is what I say to my hypermobile clients all the time, is just because you can doesn't mean you should. So a lot of well-meaning providers or clients will say, oh, you know, you're really stiff because of your back, do some yoga, or, you know, do a lot of this double knee to chest. And what ends up happening is, because my clients are so inherently over-flexible, they regain that motion really quickly, get to end range, and then because of their faulty collagen can actually damage tissue pretty easily. So what I like to talk about is kind of working more in mid ranges and not going, you know, to full end range and the party tricks that you often see with folks that are hypermobile. So just because you can doesn't mean you should. And you really want to stay more kind of, you know, and I'm sure this is a big part of the way you treat, Ashley, is knowing how to activate core muscles, knowing that, you know, that's kind of like your center or your building block for the stability of your spine. And focusing on that versus just doing a lot of repeated end range movement.
You bring up this concept of stiffness, and I agree. And I'm so glad you bring that up. And throughout that, you brought this concept of like stiffness and soreness for someone who's dealing with EDS. And it's like, well, this person's hypermobile. Why would they feel stiff or why would they feel sore in the first place? I have my own theories, but I would love to get some confirmation from you.
Yeah, I mean, a couple different reasons. So one, you know, if you have neural involvement, so if your nerve is getting compressed right away, that tissue can tighten down. So even though you have inherent excessive movement, your body's going to tighten down an area. And so you can feel tight even though you have inherent hypermobility. The other thing is fascial restrictions. So again, you know, anytime you have any kind of nerve involvement or neural tension or injury to tissue, your fascia is going to stop gliding and sliding like it should. And that itself can make you feel tight. So you might think like, oh, I've got to really stretch this because it feels tight. And you're going into these crazy end ranges that you don't need. And you're never really going to feel loose again just because of that, you know, fascia being stuck down or bound down.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I'm in agreement with that because and this is something that I saw recently where I had a patient who was dealing with some pretty significant back spasms, and they would go to a chiropractor. They go get adjusted, which I'm a huge fan of chiropractic care. You know, I think that there's a huge spot for it.
Yep.
But what was interesting was the fact that they they got adjusted, and then they were given a fair amount of these stretches. And I was kind of looking at and feel like, well, what's the general theme? And they were given, say, like the knees to chest stretch,
right.
The pigeon stretch. And I was like, okay, these are all okay. But, and this was interesting, and this is my interpretation of the majority of, say, back muscle spasms, as off, like, and this is just from my perspective, back muscle spasms are often caused because of the fact that those muscles are contracting so aggressively or working so much that yes. they end up getting into, in the physiological terms, they get into a tetanic contraction right. where it, right. they're like contracted so much and all of a sudden they lock up. And right. what's really interesting is that they contract so much and they lock up. One of the many stretches that people are given is like just trying to get the back moving more and more and more and more and more. And so after noticing that, I realized that people dealing with spasms, I said, your instinct is probably to stretch it out, but yeah. try to avoid that.
Exactly.
Get into a position that is a little bit more comfortable, but you rather than having to stretch and stretch and stretch,
right.
let's focus on getting the other parts of the body moving. And it goes into the aspect of protection. Here you have yeah. these patients who are hypermobile, right? Like I'm right. a pretty flexible person myself, but when a joint is hypermobile, the body needs to create some sort of stability.
Right, to protect
yep. it. Yep. And when you're dealing with, say, frequent dislocations or a lot more range of motion, those muscles need to kind of grip to protect you. And oftentimes right. that soreness and that stiffness is saying, hey, Ashley, you don't have to take me that far.
Right.
And so I really appreciate you bringing that up. And also like the concept of fascial restriction too,
yeah.
To be able to say that it is important for our joints to be moving, but it's also important for our tissues to be sliding right. on each other as well,
right. which exactly. is true.
Yeah.
And again, because of our inherent lower...
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
For muscle tone, a lot of times we don't have really great strength or stability, and we use the wrong muscles to try to stabilize an area. So oftentimes we're using the smaller, weaker muscles to try to stabilize. They go into spasm, and then you release those smaller, weaker muscles, and then you don't have any activation of your larger stabilization muscles, and then you're in a cycle. And that's why a lot of times chiropractic can be tricky with folks with hypermobility, because they feel good, they walk out of the office, and they go back out of alignment immediately because they have no stability. You have about like 10 seconds to like turn on those deep stabilizers after you've calmed something else down. Otherwise, you're just going to go right back to where you were. Our bodies are really efficient at doing that.
I really appreciate you bringing that up. It's like using the wrong muscles and also really just have overusing the small muscles. And I see this actually a lot in, I don't see this as much. Well, actually, I do see this in people dealing with sciatica, but like one of the most recent ones I've seen people who are dealing with a lot of shoulder pain.
Yes.
Because they'll go in and then they're like, oh, my shoulder hurts. And the doctor diagnoses them with like a rotator cuff issue. And the
sure.
first set of exercises, if you go into, we'll say 9 out of 10 physical therapy clinics, is a rotator cuff strengthening protocol, where it's like, okay, here you have an irritated rotator
yeah.
cuff. You might have a couple tears in your supraspinatus. Let's
yeah.
go ahead and do external rotations, I's, Y's, and T's. And it's like, here's these muscles who are already overworked.
Right.
Why would we want to actually work them more?
Exactly.
Let's get the core moving so we can get the good possible rhythm. And
right.
I really appreciate you saying like using the wrong muscles to do the to do said activity, because
yeah.
over the years, and I've been practicing for about 12, over the years I realized, okay, it's not just the like what exercises we do, but it's really how we do those exercises, right?
And
so yeah. it's important for us to efficiently recruit our muscles so we can use the correct areas of our body to actually get the specific activity done. And I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Absolutely.
And it's fantastic to hear. So so we're looking at, and it's great knowing that we don't necessarily have to go to end range, especially if you have EDS, because your end range is gonna be way beyond everyone else.
Exactly. Right?
And so, yep. And from there, let's talk about some specific action steps from like an orthopedic standpoint, for the folks who have been diagnosed with EDS,
yep.
who are dealing with back pain or sciatica, and they're seeing a practitioner right now, but they're probably not getting better as fast or as efficiently as they were hoping for.
Right.
So what are some of the key components that may be missing out of their plan or things that they should be looking out for?
Yeah. So it really is like a three-step or three-part way of looking at the problem. And if you don't hit all three of those parts, then you may not be getting better as quickly as you would like. So one, the first is posture and how you navigate, through your day and your world. So making sure and not using, you want good posture or perfect posture. It's just having good body awareness and knowing when you're doing things for a prolonged period of time that maybe puts you in a compromised position. So that's the bigger issue with posture. But I just use posture as being like the umbrella. But knowing how you move in space and how your body moves and how you hold your body. And really, for hypermobile folks, movement is medicine. We don't do well in one position ever. So there's never going to be, if you sit in this perfect posture, you're going to be great. Nah. We're kind of like therapy. If anybody has any experience with therapy, you put therapy on a table. Initially, it's the shape of whatever container it was in. But if you put it on the table, over time, it starts to pancake out and then basically assume the shape of whatever the new container is. That's kind of like hypermobility. You put that structure or the person in a position, eventually they're just going to start taking up all that extra space. So that's number one. Two, is strengthening and strengthening correctly, strengthening the right muscles, working on the deep stabilizers, not the superficial ones. And then obviously the nutrition piece that we already keyed into. So those three things, super important if you're going to feel, that you've achieved optimal health or wellness, and really maximized how your body moves and works in its world.
I love it. Yeah. When I look at posture, not only is it like, what's the person looking like standing in front of it, also what are the positions that people are assuming throughout the day? And I think what's interesting is that, especially with all the information that is out there, and especially with the rest of social media, you're going to have some PTs out there on the internet saying, well, posture doesn't really matter. And so what's interesting about that is, if you look at any of the content of the folks who are saying that posture doesn't matter, what's really cool for them is the fact that they're assuming varied positions throughout the day. So
right.
That variety is what allows right. you to feel good
yes.
and resilient. And I know that especially from a sciatica standpoint, one of the first things that I'll look at is the shoulder shift. If your shoulders are shifted to one side, actually, before we do anything else, we have to get your shoulders stacked right. on top of your hips.
Exactly.
And so, but also understand that there is variation in movement and body awareness. I think that's really important. I notice, especially in the way that I practice, I spend a little bit more time saying, all right, well, if it hurts to bend over to pick something up from the ground, if it hurts to pick up your child, well, let's look at how you pick up your child. It,
sure.
it only makes sense. It doesn't make, so if someone says it hurts to pick up their kid and I just give them clamshells all day, that
exactly.
doesn't address the root cause issue, right?
Exactly.
So it is important to be able to, and this is something that you listeners, if you're currently working with a PT or chiropractor and you're like, I'm feeling like PT is getting me a little bit stronger, but it still hurts to do X activity, have that provider actually look at said activity so they
correct.
Can start making those modifications. And you'll notice that you're going to be improving a lot better. And that goes
yeah.
into even like sitting and laying down as well. And so it's
100%.
It's that.
And sleeping positions, all
yeah.
of it. So you have to address wherever that person is having pain, that's where you want to key in. When do you get the pain? And let's look at that. And what does that look like for that person?
And so we looked into, we talked a little bit more about the gut microbiome and the gut function earlier in this episode. And really just understanding that if we don't have that muscle tone, pretty much food kind of rots in our stomach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of different things that we can do to ensure that we're getting some diagnostic accuracy. What are some general nutrition recommendations to really just optimize the function of our gut?
Yeah, so some basic things that I kind of give, and this doesn't mean that this is for everyone, but when I'm, you know, kind of just coaching folks and giving them advice, there are some key things that I start them out with. And if they tolerate them well, great. And I usually just say, add one thing at a time. So, you know, how are you tolerating it? A lot of people try to do everything all at once, and that's a recipe for disaster. So, you know, basically look at what you're currently doing and then try to add one positive thing in and see how it works for you. One of my favorites that's usually very well tolerated is aloe vera juice. You can get it in a bottle. It's a liquid form, not a gel, and you drink it. For folks that are prone to more constipation, I usually tell them to get the whole leaf. And if you have more either irritable bowel or more looser stool, then the inner fillet is usually tolerated pretty well. But that's one of the easy ways to kind of calm your gut. And, you know, it's the same way it works on the outside of your body for a burn. It just is very calming for an irritated GI system. So people who sometimes, I've had some clients that have had reflux for like 20 years and they've been taking whatever meds and Nexium and all kinds of things that really can mess up your system. And they just try some aloe vera juice and their reflux goes away. So, you know, it can be something as simple as that, that can make huge changes. Other things that I usually recommend, obviously lots of fiber, fruits and vegetables. But if you don't get enough, or if you need extra, psyllium husk often is, you know, in the mornings with, you know, mixed in with a lot of water, really great way to kind of keep things moving. If that's not tolerated, because a lot of people can't tolerate it, there's a whole other host of fiber things that you can try. And then there's a ton of supplements that can help, obviously a good probiotic. Zinc is great for the gut and for, you know, keeping things under control. D-limonene is another one. And then there are supplements that help with building protein, L-arginine, glutamine, and CoQ10 for mitochondria function and production of energy for people with low energy, magnesium to kind of keep things relaxed in the gut and keep things moving, vitamin C for healthy collagen. So lots of things that can be super helpful. But, you know, always with anything, like I said, you want to, you know, check with your physician. You also want to make sure that you're only changing one thing at a time when you make those changes.
Yeah, all extremely helpful. And I am so glad that you said change one thing at a time, because I think that the way that people and the listeners here who have probably been through the entire gamut of rehab professionals is that they go in, they're like, oh, you have this diagnosis, let me give you 13 different exercises. And they kind of just like go through it.
Right.
And you don't know if it helps or not. And
right.
So, and it's interesting because going along the lines of sciatica pain, they're like, okay, well, here's the 13 different stretches. Like the first exercise is like a child's pose. And then the
right.
second stretch is a cobra pose. And it's like, those are two very conflicting positions.
Right.
And
sure.
And so to be able to see, change one thing at a time and see if it works, I think
right.
it's really helpful. And people, listeners, you have to understand that when it comes to dealing with your health, especially from a pain management standpoint, is that we have to, us as practitioners, we have to approach this via a scientific method. And so a scientific
right.
method is that, you know, we have this idea, we have this problem, your sciatica pain, and then we have to gather the information from you. But from that information, we have to have a hypothesis. And the more often than not, everything we're working with is based off an educated guess. And
absolutely.
That educated guess
yeah.
is going to be either supported or refuted by each individual
exactly.
intervention that we provide. And
yeah.
we can't tell it if it works unless we actually give it time to see
exactly.
if it works.
And
so,
you know, what I
yeah.
what I love, and Ashley, I don't know if you've utilized it in your practice, is I'll have somebody come in and they've been given, you know, 10 different things. I'll have them do one of those things. I'll check their strength in the affected leg. And if their strength is good, I'm like, great, that's a safe one. Let's go to the next one. And if their strength changes, and a lot of people don't realize that, you know, they feel like strength is strength. But if you have neural involvement and you're getting into a position and it puts stress on that nerve, you're going to lose that strength. And so very systematically, you can test someone and be like, nope, that one's not good for you yet. Doesn't mean you can't ever do it. It just means that right now your body's not ready for that. So that's a great way for people. And they can do it at home too. You know, you can do like a seated, you know, you're in a chair and you're getting up from the chair with that affected leg. Can you do that? And then you do your stretch that you've been given and you no longer can do that, then you know there's a problem. So
I love that. Yeah, it's really the concept of test retest, and which is what the basis of what pain management should have been in the first place. But unfortunately, given the way the system has changed, a lot of practitioners, even the physical therapy profession, started to not be able to afford that type of treatment. But that's really how it should be, to be able to say, all right, let me tell you a little bit more about that. And so all extremely helpful. Let's talk about some lifestyle. So we have nutrition, obviously. We have the importance of getting stronger.
Yep.
What are some of those invisible lifestyle things that people should consider?
Yeah, I think, again, just getting back to just because you can doesn't mean you should. So, you know, just trying to think about, you know, what you do in life and kind of minimizing either risk of injury or doing things that might get you into trouble. So I'm not a black and white kind of person. There's a lot of gray. And so I'll never give blanket recommendations. And if I have a client that's like, you know, I love yoga and it's my passion, I'm going to say, great, let's work within safe ranges and do things that are, you know, safe for your body, and maybe minimize some of those extreme and range positions that you might love. So instead of doing pretzel yoga, thinking about power poses, balance poses, core strengthening, rather than getting into, you know, an extreme twist that could put, you know, 1,000% increased load on a disc that already has some collagen compromises. So you can do anything you want, but you want to know, how do I minimize my risk doing that activity? You know, downhill skiing, maybe not the best for people who are chronic dislocators. but again, you know, if you're a runner and you want to be able to run, I'm never going to tell you not to run. I'm going to say, okay, how do we maximize your ability to run in a safe, effective way? Whether it's, you know, having to build more core strength, increase your dorsiflexion range of motion because you've lost that. Maybe you lost some of your toe extension, you know, doing those things that enable you to do the activity in a safe manner. But really just thinking about, you know, as much as you can, optimizing your health. So lifestyle recommendations, you know, eating clean, getting enough sleep, trying to make sure that your gut health is in check. And that can help, you know, everything that you're dealing with.
Amazing. It's kind of like whenever you see like the alcohol commercials or like drink responsibly, I like to think about it's like live responsibly. It's like,
yeah.
it's being aware of that. And you know, what's interesting is, I like to say something very similar to my clients. I tell them, listen, it's not that movements are bad or things to do are bad, but my job is to help you do things responsibly to ensure that you're doing things right, but also you're not putting yourself in a compromised position.
Yeah.
Will you ever have to be like, are there going to be times where you're going to have to be in those compromised positions? Absolutely.
Absolutely. We don't live in a bubble,
yeah.
Right? Like, you know, people
exactly.
have to do what they have to do. Yep.
Yeah. And I noticed this firsthand. I remember transitioning from, we'll say like the original PT thought process on back health. It's like, oh, you should never move your spine. Your spine needs to be extremely rigid. But the reality is there's going to be points in time we're going to have to pick things up with a rounded back. So if we do pick things up with a rounded back, like how can we really improve the ability to do that without compromising things, right?
Right.
And it's really a matter of-
And then also to do damage control, right? Like, so not being so afraid of your pain. You know, we develop PTSD really quickly when you've been through a very severe pain episode and you do anything to avoid it. But instead of having that fear factor saying, okay, if you do end up with pain, well, what are some self-treatment tools that you can use and you can do effectively to get yourself back out of pain? And you know, whether it's a simple position or whether it's getting on a foam roller, you know, there are so many things that are great self-treatment tools that help to get things back under control and to, you know, minimize your pain quickly.
Yeah. So we got damage control. I like to call it putting out the fire,
yeah.
Which I like damage control. It's much more gentle.
Yeah.
to look at. So, you know, we spent this past like say 30 to 40 minutes, like talking about EDS, how to manage it. We were also talking about how EDS can often just be overlooked, right? So for the listeners out there who don't have an EDS diagnosis, but they're like, I'm not getting any better. things kind of seem like
sure
it relates to me. What are some of the, like, what are some action steps that listeners who are like, okay, this might apply to me, what can they do to help get a better, clear understanding of, to figure out if they have EDS or not?
Yeah. So, I mean, the kind of quick, like a quick, thing to look at is the Bighton score. So you can pull that up online. It's B as in Bod, E-I-G-H-T-O-N. It's a, you know, there's a 9-point scale. And if you can get a 5 or greater on that scale, you have hypermobility for sure. So that's going to key you in right away. Even if you don't get a 5 out of 9 on that scale, you can still have hypermobility. It would just be an HSD diagnosis at that point, which is treated the same way. So if you know that you, you know, some other things that might be, you know, ways that I get keyed in, this might be something going on. My hands and feet get cold easily, easily bruising, crowded mouth palate, a high, narrow palate in the teeth, a lot of teeth crowding, trouble with sleeping, gut issues, you know, a lot of anxiety, or, you know, having trouble focusing on things, or, you know, slowing your mind down, racing thoughts. So a lot of those things can be related to EDS or hypermobility. And so if you have any of those kind of things and you haven't gotten, you know, relief in a traditional way, it might be something to look at and to certainly talk to your doctor about. The only way to get a true diagnosis, though, you do have to go see a geneticist. One of the biggies in the industry is Claire Francomano, and she is in Indianapolis now, and hard to get in with. But a geneticist in general can give you your official diagnosis.
Very cool. Listeners, there you have it. You know, we spent the past 35 minutes plus talking about EDS and how it actually relates to sciatica, and also some key considerations. And the good news is that, you know, the more knowledge, the better, but then also it allows you to truly advocate for yourself. So throughout this entire time, we were talking about how important it is that the stiffness that you feel could be really more of a protective mechanism rather than having to stretch through it.
Right.
And there's many different things that you can do. So, and what's really great is the fact that Jennifer actually works with a lot of folks who are dealing with EDS. And so, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on today's episode. I learned a lot, and it's really exciting to, I learned a lot, and I also had a lot of suspicions or inklings in regards to what I think was related to EDS and how to manage it. It's really good to hear some confirmations about that, and also learning new things on top of that. For the listeners who are like, I have some more questions.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, email is the best way, just because I'm with clients all day, just like every other busy physical therapist. So don't try to call me, but absolutely email. And our email is 1-O-N-E@1PAULTFFrank.com.
Awesome. Listeners, I'm going to go ahead and put that email into the show notes. Any of the other links that we have will also be found in the show notes as well. So if you have any questions, reach out to Jennifer. And Jennifer, it was great to see you. This was awesome. And I learned so much.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you, Ashley. Really appreciate the opportunity. And it's great working with like-minded providers. So we're helping the world one client at a time.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.